Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Folks, today we have a very interesting show. We're going to be taking a look deeper into 2024, and even maybe a little bit beyond, about what exactly will become of the wrestling industry in the coming year, which takes us into February of, obviously, 2025. And I really think that there's a lot of big changes, and I really think that some of them probably are not for the better. So we'll be delving into that a bit and talking about the good, the bad, and what is likely to stay the same. We're going to obviously be discussing this week's SmackDown, and we'll be talking a little bit about the Elimination Chamber. Before we get into that, we did, in fact, touch upon tragic story of Billy Jack Haynes arrested for the murder of his wife. And now apparently it is coming out a little bit more that it was kind of done in a almost as a mercy killing from what I'm hearing. It's a tragic story. Billy Jack Haynes' life has not been a pleasant one for a long, long time. Many people probably understand that he came out with a story concerning the boys on the tracks, which is, if you're not familiar with the story, he claims that at the time he was working for the WWE, he was also working as a bodyguard for a drug cartel that may or may not have been run by a former president of the United States who was at the time governor. He claims that during a drop that two boys who had supposedly been found on the tracks hit by a train after having smoked marijuana were actually executed by this drug cartel for stumbling onto their drop. He claims to have witnessed it, although he did not participate in it. Now, many people have called BS on that. Many people have said it's an absolute joke. It's not true. Some of the timelines he came up with didn't seem to be accurate, considering where he was at the time with the WWE. But he had certainly suffered some mental issues. Whether he was correct about this or not, I don't know. But he had certainly suffered some mental issues due to multiple concussions, apparently. And his wife had suffered from severe dementia to the point where a friend of both of them, Devin Nichols, which is Hannibal in the wrestling community, says that Billy Jack couldn't really even leave the house, that his wife had become so bad that he had to 24-hour take care of her, and that he had canceled several phone interviews even that he had requested with him, saying he just wasn't up to it. There was a lot going on. There was a lot of stress. A very weird situation where apparently a guinea pig that they had passed away, and they had named it after their son who was deceased, and they considered it a member of the family. And I just don't know. I don't know exactly what to tell you about the whole thing. It was a very weird, very unusual situation. From what I'm hearing, things had deteriorated to the point where he felt it was in his best interest, her best interest, I guess, to end it, and may have considered ending his own life as well. Depends on the reports you listen to. There was a standoff with himself and the police. not a violent standoff, but he wasn't coming out of the house, and they weren't necessarily approaching it. It was quite a mess, quite a mess. So very tragic story. We wanted to update you on that a little bit, that it's quite possible that Billy Jack Haynes obviously will be spending the rest of his days in prison, Mike. It's a tragic end to kind of a tragic story.
Yeah, and this is I've heard Jim Cornette talk about Billy Jack Haynes and how he was kind of a guy that in his career was a guy with all the potential in the world, but, you know, just through himself or through life, just didn't live up to the potential. He burned bridges all over the place. He did all his stuff. And now this, you know, so this is just a sad guy with a sad life, you know, that, like we said, like I just said, he had all the potential in the, when he was back in the 80s and late 70s and early 80s, he had all the potential in the world and never did live up to it.
Yeah, you know, very sad situation, and it does go to what we're going to be talking about a little bit when we talk about what 2024 holds in the future of professional wrestling, because I think one of the biggest things that's changed over the past 10 years in pro wrestling is the people who get involved in it. Now, I'm not trying to stereotype any profession, but I think it's fair to say that at one time, wrestling was filled with people who were almost like carnies in a way, and very unusual people went into this profession. People that were unique and had their own issues, and it wasn't like it is now, where there's a lot of people who, and I would grow up in high school doing wrestling, saying I'd like to be a professional wrestler because it's cool. It was different back then. It was different. And I don't think it's arguable. I mean, The Undertaker said at times there's people had to have guns in the locker room, right? And he was chastised for that. And he said, you know, now everybody go in, everybody's playing video games, and everybody's high-fiving everybody and just, you know, playing video games and staying to themselves, and it's not the edgy people that it used to be. Well, you know, you can take that the way you want to take it. There's a good and a bad. The bad on that is that we are now seeing a lot of athletes who, you know, if they break their fingernail during a match, want to call it off. And the good in it is we're not seeing people who were sort of unfit for conventional employment, so to speak, get into the business as much. So it's a six of one, half a dozen of the other thing. This particular story, though, it strikes me that Billy Jack Haynes was a person who clearly needed some help and clearly didn't get any. And I'm not really sure why the people around him, he had to have family and friends, didn't attempt to seek that out, because if fans knew it and other friends knew it, certainly people who were closer to him knew it. So it's unusual to me that someone didn't say, perhaps we need an intervention here. If his wife is getting this bad, and he's not really capable of taking care of her completely with his mental issues, perhaps we need help. It just strikes me that he was sort of left alone, when in reality he could have used a little bit of a hand, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this is like a sad situation here with an actual wrestling legend. Legendary wrestler who, like Billy Jack Haynes, who is going through a lot. And, well, like you said, he's probably going to spend the rest of his days in prison. I don't think he's going to make it in prison, to be honest with you, the way
this is. Well, you see, the thing is, I'm not condoning anything he did, or I'm not excusing it. You know, you murder somebody, you deserve to go to prison. But certainly there had to be some warning signs there. Certainly there had to be people who knew this can't continue the way it's continuing with a good outcome. You can't have someone suffering from complete dementia to the point where they cannot be left alone 10 minutes at the mercy and the care of someone who also is not adequately capable of taking care of them. That's a big issue. And I understand and I appreciate there is no one on earth more sympathetic to losing a pet than me. I am a huge animal lover to the point where it sometimes is absurd. And I'm buying $75 worth of apples a month to feed deer. So I understand, believe me, and I understand completely when you lose a beloved pet, it's extremely difficult. But when you go into an absolute state of shock over losing a guinea pig, and you're an adult, that's a warning sign. When you've named your pet after your deceased child, and you now live vicariously through that is your child, that's a warning sign. And people knew that. People knew that's the way they felt. And I'm dumbfounded how someone didn't say, we need a little intervention here. I'm dumbfounded to that. So it's a tragic story, and, you know, it ends poorly, and it's just a shame. And obviously the blame goes to Billy Jack Haynes, who made the decision to kill his wife. But at the same token, you know, I just wish there had been someone who could have stepped in and said, there's a definite issue here that needs to be resolved. They need some care. And this could have all been prevented, likely could have all been prevented. Anyway, Tony Khan was recently asked, and I thought this was pretty interesting, about this merger that's happening with Warner Brothers teaming up with Fox and ESPN to launch a joint streaming platform. And that's going to showcase sports programs. And it's sometime in the fall of 2024, this service is going to launch. It's going to have baseball, hockey, football, UFC, which is now merged with WWE, by the way. It's part of TKO. And they haven't said anything about professional wrestling. But nonetheless, Warner Brothers' current home of AEW. Warner Brothers Discovery is AEW's current broadcast partner, right? So now comes the thought, is this where the future of AEW is going to be? When they announced this in 2024, are they going to have AEW programming on it? Well, Tony Khan has spoken out saying that it's a really exciting time. That they're currently don't have a streaming platform that they're associated with, and it's something that he thinks the wrestling fans really want, and that they have an extensive library with content, and they're producing new content. It sounds like he really wants this. And I don't blame him, because part of what we'll be talking about a little later on is that this is probably where the future of wrestling is going to be. I'm looking at professional wrestling, and I'm saying to myself, we are now probably at an era where baseball was a long time ago, where you had a certain network. I know for myself, when I was a child, the Mets played on WOR Channel 9, and the Yankees played on WPIX Channel 11, and that's just the way it was. Then along came SNY. Then along came the YES Network. And there's still games occasionally on those stations, but for the vast majority of games are now on those streaming services. And I'm guessing that that's what wrestling's future is going to be. WWE has signed with the USA Network, obviously, so that'll take a little while for any of SmackDown programming to do that. But we all know that Raw is going on Netflix. So where do we go from here? Well, if Tony Khan does sign this, it's going to be big because this is also a company that the WWE is part of. If they're going to merge these three entities, UFC is a part of this. And, of course, UFC, Anthem, TKO, that's WWE's company as well. So, Mike, it's very interesting to speculate that we might be seeing some sort of a half merger here with this come mid-fall of 2024.
Absolutely. And look, doesn't Peacock still have the, well, it used to be the network, the WWE network, but a lot of the older WWE programming.
Yes.
So, and NBC Universal is USA.
Yep.
So I don't know who owns Netflix. I don't know who owns Netflix, but it's a streaming service. So there you go. And we got to see what happens. I mean, look, if AEW goes there, then what's going to happen with ROH? Because Tony Khan owns ROH as well.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting thing. You know, their deal expires, I think it's December 31st. Of this year, and certainly by long before that, we're going to know whether they've signed another deal with Warner Brothers Discovery, or they're finding a new network, or they're going to do a streaming thing. There's good and bad about this. The good news is when you do something like this, you're not really worried that much about the ratings. I mean, you've sold your product to a streaming service. That streaming service now owns your product. If you happen to subscribe to that streaming service, then you're likely to watch it. You know what I mean? You're probably going to watch it. You don't necessarily need cable to do it, which is going to hurt the cable companies tremendously. It's already hurting cable companies, by the way. But the downside is, if these are all different pay services, how many services are fans going to pay for? Now, we've already discussed that you're going to have Peacock if you want to see the WWE pay-per-views, at least legally. So Peacock is a must. Now Netflix soon is going to be a must. So now you're going to have two pay services. USA Network is only available if you have cable, so you have to pay for cable. So now you're going to have to pay for cable plus two premium streaming services just to get all the WWE content. Now, let's say AEW does this merger. You're going to have to pay separately for that too now. And this now becomes a little ridiculous. I mean, at one point in my life, I was paying, I don't know, $140 or something for cable a month. But you need, obviously, Fox. I need to be able to get USA. I need to be able to get the Warner Brothers stations to see all the wrestling stations I needed. So I had to go to a package that included all these stations. Then they moved to Peacock for the pay-per-views, which certainly helped financially because you didn't have to pay $50, $60 per pay-per-view. You just paid monthly. But at the same token, that you're adding Peacock. Now you're telling me, well, you're going to have Peacock. You're going to have Netflix. You're going to have regular cable for the USA Network. If AEW starts a stream with on this streaming service, you're going to have this streaming service. And by the time you add all this up, I don't know if your average wrestling fan is going to be able to afford this. You're probably talking well over $200 a month. And I've heard a lot of people say, I don't watch a single other thing on Peacock. Well, it's still a good value, though, because you were going to be paying for the pay-per-views. So even if you don't watch another single thing on Peacock, you're still way ahead of the game. You're way ahead of the game because you're getting every single WWE pay-per-view. So that's fantastic. But what about everything else? You didn't have to pay, really. If you had cable, you had Fox. If you have cable, you have USA. If you had cable, you have Warner Brothers Discovery. Now you may not, right? Now it's to the point where you say, well, I have to have the cable. So let's say your cable's, I don't know, $80 a month. So you're paying $80 a month so you can see USA Network. Now you're going to pay, I don't know, $20 for Peacock. There's $100. Then you're going to pay for Netflix, who I promise you, the minute WWE is officially on there, they're going to raise their rates. Now we're talking about this merger with Fox and Warner Brothers Discovery and ESPN. You're going to pay probably $25 a month for that. Pretty soon you add all this up and you're looking at $200 a month. That's $50 a week. Now, for somebody like us, maybe that's not a big deal. But let's say you're, I don't know, 17, 18 years old. You're working at a job that's just giving you enough money to scrape by, or you're, you know, still living with your parents. Your parents don't want this. And what do you do? Well, I know people are going to say, well, you can find it. You can find it on different sites. Yeah, but not everybody does that. And not only does everybody not do that, it's a pain in the ass. You want to be in the place where the most people can see you. I would assume. And I'm not sure this is really the way it's going to work, because if you don't already have Netflix, how many people are going to say, just for the WWE, I am going to buy Netflix? I don't need it. I don't watch a lot of movies. I don't watch their original programming. But I have to see WWE, so I guess I'm going to buy Netflix. I don't know, Todd. It seems to me like you could cut your own throat with this, because then some of these shows don't become must-watch. You're just like, well, I'll just watch SmackDown. I won't watch Raw. I'm not going to pay another $20-some-odd a month just to watch Raw if it's the only show on there I'm going to see.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I will not get Netflix. Well, what's the sense of getting Netflix to just watch WWE like once a week and that's it? I just will not get that.
See, I fear that a lot of fans are going to be that way. I fear you're going to get an awful lot of people, Mike, who say, look, Tony Khan's running three shows a week or four. WWE is running Raw and SmackDown and NXT. Then TNA, what are they going to do? They're going to have their own streaming service. They're going to move to a station I need to get a higher cable package to get. At some point, you're going to price yourself out of the market, and people are going to say, look, I'm at my wit's end with this. I'll watch highlights on YouTube or something else. And this could be, financially, it's a boost for the companies because they get their money ahead of time. But I don't know if it means that more eyes are going to necessarily be on the product.
Well, yeah, I don't know that either. You know, NXT will be on CW, right? So that's NXT and SmackDown, you know, will be on, one will be on USA, one will be on CW, and I guess the NXT pay-per-views are on Peacock, right?
Yep.
I think. So.
Yes.
So you got, now you got the WWE pay-per-views and the NXT pay-per-views on Peacock for now, at least. Now. You mentioned TNA. I think the move for TNA will not be directly to a streaming service. They will go from Access TV to possibly, I don't know, USA or you know, or whatever, if AEW moves away from Warner Brothers, they may go to Warner Brothers. That would be the move, the interim move for Impact, for TNA, right? Now, the other ones, I will continue to do what I've been doing, and I've been going to bed early, and I've been finding on, I don't want to say less than reputable websites, but you get what I'm saying. But a lot of people aren't going to do what I'm going to do, though. So
that's my point. That's my exact point. A lot of people aren't going to do that because it takes effort. And there's a lot of people who say, well, yeah, I'll do that for a week or two. And then they sort of drop off and say, I'm tired. I have to search that down and watch it on a laptop. And there's problems. I foresee problems with this. And I think one of the major problems now with pro wrestling is it's no longer the fans that are bringing you the profit margin. I warned everybody when this started happening, I said, this is bad for wrestling. When you get to the point where you say the fans are basically decoration, in the arenas especially, we don't necessarily care. We're not making any money off. Yes, we want the ratings to be high, because if the ratings are high, then we can demand more money for our product. But at the same token, we don't necessarily care if the arenas are just, we could let everybody in for free. Now, I want you to understand that there are plenty of television shows that tape live in front of a studio audience, and they let their studio audience in free. The reason they let their studio audience in free is it's irrelevant. The amount of money they could make by charging is irrelevant because they've already gotten their money through the TV networks who picked up their show. You don't have to pay to get in to see a sitcom. You don't have to pay to get in to see one of these court shows like the People's Court, or you don't have to pay to go see The Price is Right or whatever. You don't have to pay for those. You just send away for tickets. They'll send you tickets. You see, now the wrestling, they've considered themselves more of a sporting event. Of course you got to pay to see the Mets. Of course you got to pay to see baseball. But at the same time, if you're a Yankee fan and you have Yes Network, you're going to see all the Yankee games, basically. Yeah, there's going to be a few that's on, PIX. There's going to be a few that's on Game of the Week. But the vast majority, and I mean the vast, vast majority, 90% or more, of the Yankee games is going to be on the service you pay for, the Yes Network. One network. They don't say, well, our home games will be on Yes, and then our away games in the West Coast will be on this pay service, and then our away games on the East Coast will be on this pay service, because they know that baseball fans would say, well, I'm not paying that. Paying three separate services for the same entity. Now, I understand that there's not one single network that's going to give the WWE the windfall that they would want for all of their shows. It would be billions and billions of dollars, and nobody's going to do it. But ideally, that's what it should be. Ideally, what the WWE should have done, and they never did do, is the WWE should have had their WWE network stay exactly where it was, and put every single show on it. Simple as that. If you're going to make the deal with Peacock later on, you tell them, well, then you got to pick up all the shows. That way, if I subscribe to Peacock, I can see all WWE content, including NXT, including Raw, including SmackDown, if they're doing main event or whatever they're doing. That's it. One service. once in a blue moon, if you want to say, oh, we're having a special on NBC or we're having a special on whatever, okay, that's understandable. But the vast majority should be in one single place. I'm a Mets fan. I don't want to pay SNY, and I don't want to pay ESPN, and I don't want to pay five other sports things to see Mets games. That's why I have SNY. Now, if somebody was a multi-billionaire, and Elon Musk, or even Tony Khan has a lot of money, if you were to start a pro wrestling network where you said, well, we're going to try to get most of the wrestling in one shot here, you know, it would cost you billions, obviously, but you could potentially do it. You could potentially do it, but at least your companies should be able to do it. I always said when they dropped the WWE Network, they made a huge mistake selling it to Peacock. They made a gigantic mistake. For $20 a month or however much it was, if you could see every pay-per-view and then you eventually moved Raw, SmackDown, and NXT to that app, that's a small price to pay. At this stage of the game, I wouldn't even need cable if all the wrestling was on apps, because I don't watch a lot of television. So I'm currently paying $80-plus dollars a month to see two TV shows a week, literally, because I don't watch anything else. And everything else I do watch is on apps. And I think your average wrestling fan is going to say, if you're going to spread wrestling out where AEW is going to say, well, on now, if you want to watch Dynamite, you got to go to this app. If you want to watch Collision, you got to have this app. If you want to watch Ring of Honor, then you have to pay for this app. At some point, people are just going to say, well, I'm not paying for all. I'm just not doing it. And then they're going to be the ultimate losers. You see, you've taken your profit margin out of the hands of fans now, and you've given it to either apps or television stations. The television stations are paying the WWE big money. I think the WWE clearly understands that Raw is not going to be seen by as many people on Netflix as it's going to be seen, was it seen on USA. It has potential to be seen by more people. But there's an awful lot of Netflix subscribers, I would assume, that don't watch wrestling. And there's a lot of people who don't have Netflix who say, I'm not going to buy it just for wrestling. You already have the USA Network. That comes free with your cable package, right? You already have Fox. That came free with your cable package. So all of these are available to everyone at all times. So if you're a kid, if you're 12, 13 years old, and you want to watch wrestling, and your parents are like, well, we got cable. We don't like wrestling. But we got cable, so if you want to watch wrestling, hey, it's on there anyway. Go ahead and watch it in your room. But are they going to buy Netflix? I don't know. Are they going to buy this new app so you can watch AEW? I don't know. That's the problem. The problem is not so much with adults who can make their own decisions. How about the wrestling fans of the future who really can't make their own decisions right now because they're 14, 15, and their parents are going to say, look, we're not buying another app. Our cable package is high enough. And with all the billions of dollars that's being spent, this is the reason that your cable bill is so high. This is the reason that you're paying so much for cable or these apps, is because they have to recoup the money that they're giving places like the WWE. So, you know, Tom, this could backfire. And this could end up being something where you lose wrestling fans because there's just too much to pay.
Yeah, and, you know, I got to tell you, moving the WWE Network, or eradicating it, rather, and going over to Peacock, I think was just a mistake. What I'm really thinking is that they don't have to work so hard to get people to, you know, to get their eyes on the pay-per-view. Or the premium live events, right? Because it's already on there, people are paying for it. But now, if you're going to move it to move the TV shows to Netflix, most people get Netflix. Like, I have Netflix, and if they're going to jack it up another $10, well, now I got to make a decision. Do I really want to watch those shows on Netflix every week, or am I going to just watch it for the pay-per-views? Now you're thinking, like, you know, $20 or so for Netflix, another $10 for the Peacock, which I don't use anything else but wrestling. You know, it's just too much. And then you got other, you know, federations that are out there that are going to have different streaming things, unless they combine everything, which is very unlikely.
See, well, this is my point. You're cutting the pie kind of thin. Now, for somebody like me, I don't have Netflix because there's no reason for me to. I don't really watch any of their original shows. As far as their movies are concerned, I'm a big movie buff, but I buy my stuff on you know, hard copy DVD or whatever. I don't go to Netflix to watch movies. I'm going to have to buy it. What choice do I have? Of course I've got to buy it. So now I'm over a barrel here. I'm not happy about it. Why should I be? So I have to have at least a cable package that's high enough to get USA Network, which I think is just basic cable at this point, so that's not a big deal. So I have to have basic cable. I'm going to have Peacock. I'm going to have Netflix. If this thing comes through with Warner Brothers and Fox and ESPN, I'm probably going to have that. In order to watch my baseball games, I have to have SNY. By the time you list all the things you have to have, you're subscribed to 10 apps. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. And I think at some point, fans are going to say, well, something's got to go. And then what happens? Well, it depends, doesn't it? If you're a big AEW fan, you say, well, I don't really need Netflix then. I'm just not going to watch Raw. And there you've lost fans. Or if you're a big WWE fan, you say, well, I absolutely need Netflix, but I'm not going to be able to buy if AEW goes on this new app. I'm not going to be able to buy it. So goodbye to AEW. I'll just watch matches when they post them on YouTube. Okay, well, there goes that fan base. I warned wrestling from the beginning, you're walking a slippery slope when you start this. When you start to say our main income is coming from the television networks and not fans, then the following thing happens that Tom pointed out. You were putting on pay-per-views, and you were relying on fans buying those pay-per-views. In other words, you said, look, if this pay-per-view doesn't sell, we're putting on backlash. If this doesn't sell X amount, we lost our shirt. So we have to put on the best backlash we can possibly put on. We have to entice you into buying it, because if you don't buy it, it's a disaster for us financially. As soon as they move to Peacock, they don't care. Put on a glorified Raw, and you don't want to watch it, don't watch it. You still paid for it. So now the emphasis is not on them to give you a great product. All they have to do is present something. Doesn't have to be entice that viewer to spend $50 or $60. And the minute that started happening, Mike, we started to see some of these pay-per-views go down in quality.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. You know, and that's the thing. I'm looking at the Fight Network, and on that they have old TNA, they have Women of Wrestling, they have a bunch of different wrestling federations on the Fight Network, okay? That's what we're talking about here. If we can find a network that can put everything on it, all right, like the Fight Network is doing with all these, you know, Women of Wrestling and old TNA and everything else, you know, then that's fine. But until they do that, now maybe this whole merger thing with Fox and ESPN and all that stuff, maybe that's heading that way, but that means that everybody's going to have to be on that. We can't have somebody on, you know, Honor Club or somebody on Netflix and somebody on HBO and somebody on HBO Max and somebody on Showtime and somebody on, you know, you get my point, right? Right?
Yeah, that's the problem, and I don't know if there's any network that can afford this. I mean, the WWE is getting billions. So you'd have to have a network that literally said, we're going to invest probably $10 billion. That's an awful lot of money. So you're never going to get that. You're never going to get like an all-wrestling network because nobody has that kind of money. They just don't have that kind of money to start that. So now you're left with, well, Netflix will pay the WWE $2, 3, 4, 5 billion, but they're not going to double that to get SmackDown. Even Netflix said, well, we can't spend that kind of money. That's only for two shows. Then if you said, well, we want NXT too, oh my God. Then we're going to make a deal with Tony Khan too. Well, you got no chance of making any money. You'd have to charge $50, $60 a month for your app. I guess my greater point is, if you're going to do something like this, I truly feel you're better off being on a station that people get with just a regular cable package. Because then you're going to be able to be in households that don't like wrestling, but perhaps the children do. I bump into a lot of people who say, oh, you know, I watch wrestling, and they're 15, 16 years old. Their parents don't watch it. And they wouldn't be able to afford to see it if it wasn't for the fact that their parents just subscribe to cable. So they say, well, I can watch the stations. They're already on there. Once they're not on there anymore, these same people are probably not going to be able to watch it. And then you know what's going to happen? The same thing that you're doing, Mike. They're going to have to either start trying to catch up by going through these websites, or they're going to have to try to find it on a Fire Stick, on a Kodi app, or they're going to have to try to just watch highlights on YouTube. And it's not going to be the same. But here's the deal. The wrestling federations don't care. Eventually they will care, because eventually when their deals run out and you say, well, your audience base went from 2.6 million on average to, you know, we're barely getting a million. Then they're going to care, because the deal's going to be for a lot less money. But right now they don't care. Let me explain it this way. I remember going to see a concert, and because of, I think, really poor advertisement and really poor word of mouth, a fairly famous band probably drew, I don't know, 800 people in a place that seated probably 5,000. And I remember everybody saying, oh, that band is going to be so freaking pissed. They're not, basically, they're probably not even going to get paid what they, I said, you're very wrong. They've already been paid. You think those bands take that chance? That's the promoter who takes the chance. The promoter says, hey, I'll pay you guys X amount of dollars to be here. They don't give a damn. I mean, yeah, it's embarrassing if there's nobody there, but they're not hurt financially if there isn't. If one person showed up, it doesn't matter. They're still being paid. They still got paid. It doesn't look good for them, but they still got paid. Well, the same way with the WWE now. At this stage of the game, they used to say, how many people bought our pay-per-view? Add up the numbers. How are we doing? They don't give one damn now. They don't give a damn if you just watch the highlights on YouTube. Why do they care? Peacock gave them the money already. What do they care if you watch Raw? Netflix gave them the money already. They can't un-give them the money. That's the problem. They no longer have to rely upon you. They no longer have to rely upon putting out a product that guarantees you're going to tune in. They can now just put on whatever product they want because they've got their money in advance. There's no incentive to say, oh, my God, we have to do this right away. We have to make this great. We have to do this. There's really no incentive for the WWE to have changed their mind about The Rock and Cody Rhodes. They could have said, screw you. What are you going to do? Unbuy your ticket from WrestleMania? Not watch it? We don't care. Peacock's already given us the money. You don't want to watch it? Don't watch it. It was just they were a little afraid of the public backlash. They don't want their stocks to go down. They don't want their public perception to be bad, so especially on something like WrestleMania. I got news. If this was anything other than WrestleMania, they'd have gave you the middle finger and said, we don't care if you don't like it. That's the problem. It's like going on a cruise ship. If anybody's ever went on a cruise, you've already paid for your meals. They don't give one fuck if you don't like it. All right? So it's not like they're going to say, oh, my gosh, nobody liked the food. Tough. It's not like you're paying for it. You've already paid for it. What are you going to do, not pay for it? It was included. You don't like the food? Starve. Well, that's sort of exactly what's happening here. And I just wish they'd go back to the days when you had to please the fans to make money, not please the network. Because the minute you start to try to please the networks, weird things happen. Weird things happen like, well, we have to erase Brock Lesnar from history because he may have agreed to have a sexual relationship with a woman that Vince McMahon wanted to pass on to him. So, you know what they would have said in the era of, relying upon the fans? So what? So what? You know, it's remarkable to me that the powers that be have now put themselves in a situation, people who run television stations and likely don't know very much about wrestling are in charge of wrestling. Because then it makes the decisions different. We already know that certain decisions were made because of television stations. When we were going to have Retribution be an Antifa group, the TV station nixed that and said, oh no, we're not going there. So we were cheated out of that. Now, if this thing was still on a regular television network that, basically was just carrying the show, they would have had all the power to say, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. This is what ECW fell into. ECW was such a great organization for people who loved hardcore wrestling, but they pushed buttons you can't push on TV. So when they were paying for their spot at midnight on Madison Square Garden, they could do what the hell they wanted to do. When they got onto a regular television station, they were told, you can't use this theme song. You can't do this. You can't do that. This is out. This character's got to modify their character. You can't say this. You can't do that. And it became a shell of itself, and nobody watched it. Now, USA's been very good to the WWE as a rule. I mean, they've went through the Attitude Era where they were doing a whole bunch of stuff. But Fox was just the opposite. The minute Fox got a hold of wrestling, they said, okay, well, we want all these changes. And we want this person to be the champion, and we want this group out, and we want this group modified, and we don't like this person. These are people who aren't wrestling people, Todd. So, they're the money guys. So you have to bow down to them, and that's where this whole thing begins to fall apart.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, there was a promo, a shoot, with Paul Heyman saying, throw me off the air. I remember something like that back when ECW was on TNN, the TNN network.
I do remember that, yeah. Yeah, me too. Now, Derek in the chat room saying, look, there's still going to be commercials and all these other sports things they're watching. Of course they are. I remember when they said, well, WWE Network without commercials and everything, and then they started putting commercials in. And they said, well, we're not going to put commercials on the pay-per-views, and then they started putting commercials in. Here's what you got to understand. They are now being paid by the network. Commercials are being added, so the network's getting money from that. And the WWE now doesn't really care much about the ratings. You're never going to hear anything about ratings anymore with Raw. What are you going to hear? How many people downloaded it on Netflix or watched it on Netflix? You watch it on demand on Netflix anytime. It's going to be too hot. It's going to be too hard to judge how many people's eyes are actually on the product. That's where your issue is going to be, too. Because now it's no longer, well, Monday night, I got to tune in at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock. You don't have to. You say, oh, well, I don't know, Monday night, dinner ran a little late, I'm not really feeling it. Do it Tuesday or Wednesday, I'll see it. And that's fine, and a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, that's great. That's more convenient for me. Yeah, but you know what happens then? You don't catch up to it. You think you're going to. Because I've had that happen to me. I've had it happen to me where I've DVR'd something and said, well, I just can't watch this tonight. I have things going on. So I'll watch it, and then I don't. And then by the time I get to watch it, I'm like, well, I already know the results. I'm not even going to bother. And there you go. And you don't want that. Let me give you a great example. I went down to see a Mets game, opening day, I think it was, of a Mets game. And it was a day game, and I said, I have to be back by 8 o'clock to see Raw, very important Raw. And the friend of mine that I went with said, it's a 1:30 start. Game's going to be over by 4 tops, right? An hour drive, 3 hours. You're going to be home by 5 o'clock. Don't sweat it. Well, the bus broke down. Game went, I believe, into extra innings. Bus broke down. It's getting towards 6:30. We still haven't even left the parking lot, and I'm going ballistic. Not because I couldn't DVR it, because I wanted to watch it live. I didn't want to have to hear about it. And now we're at an age where I know a lot of fans are just like, oh, well, I'm watching it Wednesday. Don't tell me what happens. I'll watch it Wednesday. And then they say, well, you know, Wednesday stuff happened. I fast-forwarded through some of it. I got the matches I was interested in. That's not watching wrestling. You're not getting the whole package that way. I really don't like so-and-so, so I just fast-forwarded through their match. Well, how do you know? How are you ever going to come to like so-and-so if you're fast-forwarding through their matches? How are you ever going to give a damn about that storyline if you're fast-forwarding through their matches? This is where the problem comes, I'm telling you. You're going to get into a situation where either people, A, can't afford the apps and they're going to buy them, or they're going to just say, well, now that I can watch it on demand anytime I want to, I'm really just, I don't care. I'll catch up to it eventually, and then you don't, and you forget. And then it's next week, and you're like, well, I didn't watch last week, so I'm not going to watch this week, so I don't know what happened. And then pretty soon you're not a wrestling fan anymore. You're just catching it once in a blue moon. I see this happen quite often, Mike, and I'm afraid it's going to happen even more once all these apps become the new thing in professional wrestling.
Right, and think about it this way. Okay, TNA was on Spike, right? What happened when they went from Spike to Pop? All right?
Yeah.
Well, Pop is not on everybody. Pop is a premium channel, and it's not on everybody's. It's not, you know, it's not a free cable it's not a lower level cable channel where everybody gets it. It's a premium channel. So what happened to TNA when they went from Pop, when they went from they lost audience, right?
Yeah.
They lost audience. Then they lost audience again when they went from Pop to access, right? That's what's going to happen here. You're gonna lose. Now, you're making a great argument. Do they care? Probably not, because they've already gotten paid. And probably the wrestlers don't care either, because as long as the check's clear, what do the wrestlers care, right?
Yeah, listen, the problem with all this, Tom is saying, why don't they all just move to Peacock? Because Peacock can't afford it. That's why. Peacock can't afford to buy these shows. However, let's say this. Now we've concentrated on the negative. Let me concentrate on the positive for a minute. This opens up a huge opportunity. Now, it may not be a financial opportunity right now, but it's an opportunity to get more eyes on the product. For federations that currently don't really have a way to get a major TV deal. If you were to put, let's say, I don't know, TNA is looking for a big deal. We're going to talk about TNA in a minute because this Scott D'Amore being fired thing really hurts TNA a lot. We'll talk about that. But let's just say, for sake of argument, NWA. If NWA was to say, we're not even worried about getting a whole bunch of money for our show, and we're going to allow it to be put on Pluto or something that you can download for free, the people who can't really pay for these other wrestling federations are going to start watching yours. That's exactly what's going to happen. So you're going to get the people who say, well, you know, I'm not going to add Netflix. And, you know, I'm not going to really add this one or that one, the Warner Brothers one. So I'm going to look around, and they say, oh, wow, what's this? These are real new episodes of NWA on YouTube or Peacock? Well, I'm watching them. And then you become fans of that because it's accessible to you. You're making wrestling inaccessible to a certain audience. Just like you've made baseball inaccessible to a certain audience. Just like you've made football inaccessible to a certain audience. Or basketball. I had a friend of mine who went to a hockey game. He said, by the time I went to the hockey game and I bought tickets and I paid for the parking and I got a couple of drinks and a couple of hot dogs there, we're talking about a $500 night. Well, I got news. Your average person who works a, you know, average job, they can't blow $500 in a night to watch guys slap a puck around. So what ends up happening is just the same exact thing that happens with concerts. You don't have your fans there. You have a bunch of rich people there who write it off on their business expenses and say, oh, I took clients to see the hockey game. I took clients to see Bruce Springsteen. They're not even really fans. You just get a whole bunch of rich people. When really that's not who it's for. It's happening with wrestling too now. I remember when you could get a front row ticket. I remember when you said, okay, it's expensive. But if you got in line early enough, I can't tell you how many times I had front row. I can't tell you how many times. Almost every time I ever went to a WWE event, even a pay-per-view, I had front row. A little more expensive, but not outrageous. Now you're talking, it's just outrageous. Nobody normal is ever going to pay for that much money. They're just not. So the people you see in the front row, I don't care whether it's some kid with a John Cena t-shirt that looks like your average kid. It's not your average kid. It's a kid of a very wealthy person who decided I'm going to buy these tickets. I don't care if they're $2,500 a seat. Think about that for a minute. If tomorrow I opened up a pizzeria and I said all my pizzas is $75 a slice, who do you think's coming into my pizzeria? People who work in, big box stores, Target, Walmart, Kmart, supermarket chains, you think they're coming in? You think your average working person's coming in to buy my $75 a slice pizza? No. You know who's coming in? A bunch of rich people who say, oh, well, this is a very high-end pizza, and I can afford it, so I'll buy it to prove I have the money to do it. That's who's going to come in. Well, that's who you got coming into wrestling now. You got your fans way in the back. And in the front, you got a whole bunch of businessmen, celebrities, rich people who couldn't give one damn who wins, who loses. It's just a joke to them. The whole thing is getting out of hand now. So it's getting out of hand. People who know it. I just read a very heartening story about Billy Joel. And apparently Billy Joel refuses to sell the first two rows of his concerts. Instead, he waits till the day of the concert and has his people go up to the nosebleed seats and upgrade fans to come to the front. And when he was asked, why do you do that? He said, because I want actual fans up front. I don't want rich people who are writing it off on their business expenses and don't know two songs, but because I'm famous, they brought their clients there to see me. I don't want that. I want fans. Well, I would think wrestling wants fans too. I would think you want real fans. And you're starting to price them out of the market, not only with your live events, but you're starting to price them out of the market with your being on all these apps. This is going to be the problem, Mike, going into the future, is you're pricing your actual product out of the market that's specifically designed for it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And look, here's the deal. I'm looking at the guide for Pluto TV, okay? And they're... Mm-hmm. There are several things. There's a Doctor Who channel. There's an Addams Family channel. There's a Beverly Hillbillies channel. There's a Perry Mason channel. That all they do is play those particular things, right? But it's a free thing, right? And so if they could, if one of these, if say Pluto TV went to, I don't know, TNA and said, okay, we'll give you your own channel, then fine. TNA will take that and, you know, we'll pay for you and you'll have your own channel. And not only would you get your TV show, but you may very well get your older pay-per-views Fight Network does with TNA already.
Well, they do have that, Mike. I believe if you look on Pluto, you will find the Impact station. And it's just old Impact stuff being played 24/7. It's nothing but Impact wrestling, but it's old. You still got AJ Styles over there and stuff. If somebody were to literally make a deal with a place like Pluto for their brand new shows, so you could advertise, you can see our brand new episode of this wrestling. This is an opportunity for a smaller company. The problem is all these smaller companies want to be bigger companies, so they're like, who will pay us? Who will pay us? Who will pay us? Eventually someone will pay you. But right now, it might behoove you to be on an app that's free so that more eyes will be on your product. Then if you can get enough eyes on that product, maybe somebody will make you an offer. You don't have to sign your life away to Pluto or a free app. You could just say, we'll do it for a year and see how that goes. This is what I'm saying about the opportunity. There's going to be fans who say, I'm not going to buy Netflix. There's going to be fans who say, I'm not going to buy this new ESPN Fox app. There's going to be fans who are not even buying Peacock. But if they could still see live, fresh, new content 20 years ago, but new content on a free app, then, yeah, maybe you would get a bunch of followers for that. Now, I know NWA for a long time put them on YouTube, and they were building up their audience that way. Now it seems that they're looking, you know, to try to make some money, but at the same time, I would rather have more eyes on my product and get people to come to the shows and try to make some money off the fans before I decided I wanted to get fat off a TV network, because no TV network's going to pick you up. That's the problem. If a TV network is shopping around for a show and they got some money to spend, they're going to go with the top draw. They're not going to go with somebody who said, well, last week your shows were on YouTube for free, so why should I pay you X amount of money? You're going to have to establish yourself first. So this could be an opportunity, Mike, for smaller companies.
Absolutely. And you can't, I mean, think about it this way. Had NWA not done what they did with the whole cocaine thing, then maybe, just maybe, they'd be on CW now instead of NXT, you know. That's a poor decision made by the company. It cost them the ability to be on a free cable channel that's not that everybody's, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Again, there's good and bad in this, but I just think the big companies they're taking the money while the money is good, but I don't know if it's good for wrestling. Because eventually what ends up happening is your normal fans they don't come anymore. They just don't. Now, I know everything goes up in price, and I know you can't say, oh, well, my grandfather told me stories of when he was a kid, he used to go to the baseball games for, you know, a buck and a half and sit in the bleachers. I get it. You can't do that anymore with athletes making $1 zillion. But at the same token, at some point, your fan base, for instance, how many real fans do you think are at the Super Bowl today? How many real fans? Now, I'm not saying a rich person can't be a fan. I'm just saying, how many just average Joe fans who work a 9-to-5 job somewhere, how many do you think is at the Super Bowl? Not many, because they can't afford it. It's unaffordable. Why should it be unaffordable? And this is what I'm worried about wrestling. Wrestling was the blue-collar, entertainment of choice. And I don't want it to become the new choice for the elitist celebrity hobnobbers to say, are you going to WrestleMania this year? Why, I think I might. I'm writing it off on my taxes as a business expense, and I'm getting front row. I want fans there. I want people who care. Otherwise, you just have performers working for people who are just like, look at those guys, man. They're pretending to fight. Isn't that funny? Is that what you want? I don't think so. I don't think that's what you want. So you got to think long and hard about this, because wrestling's at a turning point now. If you're going to make wrestling to the point where you have to be wealthy to watch it, and definitely wealthy to go, then you've isolated a great amount of your fan base. I'm very fortunate right now in my life. When I was a kid, when I was 9, 10, and I just started watching wrestling, my folks couldn't have afforded all this. There's no way. I never would have been a wrestling fan, because I never would have seen it. That's what I'm worried about. And I think it's time to really consider this very strongly and think to yourself, are we making the right move for the future of our business, as opposed to take the billions right now and run? And unfortunately, when you merge with people like Anthem and, you know, TKO, they take the money right now and run. They don't give one damn if wrestling doesn't survive 5 more years, because they'll just move on to the next thing that's very popular and they'll buy that. Because that's what they do. Vince McMahon warned us about this years ago when Ted Turner did this, when he said Ted Turner is giving more money to wrestlers than any company ever could. Way more than they're worth, and there's no possible way he is ever going to make a dime. He is going to lose money. He's going to lose big money. He doesn't care. The goal isn't to make money. The goal is to run me out of business. Well, it's the same thing now. The WWE does not care if some kid in seventh grade can't afford to watch their product. They don't care because they're not making money from that kid. They don't give a damn if they sell the T-shirt. They don't give a damn if they sell the seat. They've got their money from Netflix. They've got their money from USA Network. They got their money from Fox. They don't care. They could give all that away for free. That's an issue. That's a big issue. So what's the future of wrestling in that respect? Well, it's guarded. I don't know. I don't want it to go the way of the Super Bowl in football. I mean, as it stands now, my friend, like I said, he's a big hockey fan. And he said, I can't go to any more games. I just can't. I can't spend $500. I just can't do it. So he's not going anymore live. He'll watch it on TV. He's not going live. So who's going live? Are they your average workers that you see working in, a restaurant, working a 9-to-5 job, construction worker? No. They're people making $300,000 and $400,000 a year or more. And that's fine if they're really fans. But don't you want everybody there? Don't you want this to be all inclusive? And wrestling especially. Wrestling especially was that one entity that the blue-collar fans were most in tune with, thus the success of Stone Cold Steve Austin. If you take them out of this equation, you're going to end up regretting it. Talk a little bit about Chelsea Green, because she did an interview, and it was fascinating, because what she said made so much sense that I wish people would listen to her more. They ask her, what do you think about your win-loss record? Not very good. And, what do you think about your change of character from what you used to do? And she said, look, the goal of professional wrestling is to entertain people. If I can come through that curtain and do something that makes people entertained, whether they get mad, whether they applaud, whether they laugh, whether they boo, doesn't matter. As long as I can entertain them, that's my job. Doesn't matter if I win or lose. It matters if I entertain them because that's what I'm being paid to do. Congratulations. You get it. I am so tired of professional wrestlers not getting that it makes me sick to my stomach. For every Will Ospreay that says, I am not a sports entertainer, I'm a professional wrestler, you're an idiot. You most certainly are an entertainer, and that's all you are. You're not winning anything. You're being given it by a promoter. You're not beating anyone. You're being told that someone's putting you over. I don't care how good of an athlete you are. I don't care how many wrestling moves you know. I don't care how intricate your training is. At the end of the day, your job and your only job is to entertain the audience. Now, that is not true in UFC. It's great. It's better if you entertain the audience because then, you see the more money roll in. But your job is not necessarily to entertain the audience. Lyoto Machado was the most boring fighter I've ever seen. He was a UFC champion. He was a terribly boring fighter. None of his fights were exciting at all, ever. Still was the champion. Because his goal was to win, to entertain you. His goal was, as long as I win, doesn't really matter if the crowd's entertained, because the way I make my money is to win. That's not true with wrestling. That's not true at all. And this is what the wrestlers got to get through their head. Chelsea Green only has it in her head. She She's absolutely right. And that's why when she does come through the curtain, we as fans can see that she's trying to entertain us, and we appreciate it. Her win-loss record, she's right. It is irrelevant for this character. Because this character's job is not to be a world beater. This character's job is to be entertaining. And truthfully, Todd, it's everybody's job to be entertaining in the world of wrestling.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Dale. Like you said, Chelsea Green, I know she could play an annoying heel, but she is actually right on this. You know, she's there to entertain people, and that's what she's doing. And Will Ospreay, whatever his name is, just being the biggest idiot we ever heard when he's talking. Like,
yeah, I mean, when you're going to say something like, I'm not a sports entertainer, I'm a pro wrestler, please tell me the difference, Mike.
There is no difference. I mean, think about it. Who's one of the best pro wrestlers available and why? It's The Miz. It's R-Truth. It's Tozawa. And why? Because they're all three of those guys are what? They're entertaining. Yeah, they're good in the ring, but they're entertaining.
Yes. Absolutely correct. Stone Cold Steve Austin, during his run as the most popular guy in WWE, didn't do a whole lot more than punch you, kick you, stomp you, maybe clothesline you, suplex you. That's about it. Something you could have learned probably in a wrestling school in 2 or 3 weeks. Was he capable of a lot more? You bet he was. He was so good, they wanted to make him the ringmaster, remember? The master of the ring. That's how much they thought of Stone Cold Steve Austin's wrestling skills. His original character was the ringmaster, the ultimate professional wrestler. And what ended up bringing him the greatest success? Punching, kicking, and stomping people. What was the difference? Ringmaster was not remotely entertaining. Stone Cold Steve Austin was wildly entertaining. That is, in fact, your job. I'm glad to see Chelsea Green gets it, because that means she's probably going to rise to a bigger occasion soon, because pretty soon fans will realize, fans will start getting behind her. This is what ends up happening. It's like R-Truth. They start to get behind people like that because they say, well, I don't know, I'm being entertained by them, and that's all that really matters. I don't remember anybody saying, you know what I want to see? I want to see a one-hour Iron Man match between R-Truth and somebody. Nobody wants to see that. They just want to see R-Truth come out and be entertaining. And that's what he is. Now, there are some people who entertain you with their athletic ability, granted. But that's still entertainment. No matter how you entertain someone, that's entertainment. If you're a concert pianist and you come out and you entertain people by the brilliance of how you play that piano, fine. Or if you're just Jerry Lee Lewis and you come out smashing the same four chords over and over again, but you dance on the piano and everything else and it's really entertaining to watch, fine. But I'll tell you this. I have seen time and time again concert cellists and violinists and people who are the masters of their instrument thrill an audience of about 1,000 people. While bands who probably know four chords are playing to 10,000. So I know that the entertainment factor is more important than the skill. Almost always, even in Hollywood. The greatest actors, the Academy Award-winning actors, are usually people in films you're like, I've never heard of that film. Right? And the real popular films are filled with people, you're like, well, they're not great actors, but it's damn entertaining. At the end of the day, we watch everything for entertainment, but sports themselves has an ulterior motive. They want to be entertaining to you, but never in the history of baseball has a manager come out and said, this game is boring, why don't you let this guy hit a home run? oh, this game is getting dull. Why don't you, I'm going to have this guy try to steal a couple bases, even though he's never stolen any bases. No, they play to win because winning is the goal. Winning is not the goal in professional wrestling. It's never been the goal in professional wrestling. There are people who don't win even all that much who get paid more than people who win all the time. The goal is entertainment. So I'm glad Chelsea Green has figured that out, and I hope she goes on to greater success because of it, because then it will pave the way for other people to say, look, I got to be entertaining first and stuck on my athletic ability set. I do want to mention one thing in regard to The Miz, and that's his wife, Maurice, apparently undergoing surgery for precancerous tumors. Now, don't panic, because precancerous tumors just means tumors that look suspicious or could potentially later on become cancerous, but are not cancerous now. It's actually common. It's actually fairly common. And usually it's no big deal. Usually it's, you know, they just remove them. They keep an eye that they do not grow back. And anything that's, you know, precancerous is gone and you're fine. But I did want to mention it because I know a lot of people are going to say, did you hear? And you're going to get this big game of telephone where she's got cancer, and it's not true. Women especially. I'm not going to get into detail, but you get the idea. Women especially in certain parts of their anatomy sometimes can develop tumor. And if they look suspicious, then their doctor is going to say, well, this is precancerous. Right now, it's causing you no harm. But 10 years from now, this could turn cancerous. So let's just get rid of it now. So it's not any big giant deal, Mike, but I did want to mention it and get ahead of it before people start spreading false information about it. It's perfectly natural. It should be, you know, no big deal, and she should be absolutely fine.
Absolutely, and that's, and hopefully she is fine. She's already had her, she's a little bit old. She's already had her, what, 2 or 3 years or whatever that she's going to have. So she's good to go there. She's not planning on coming back to the WWE. Well, maybe make an appearance here and there, but that's, she's not a wrestler, so it's not going to matter. So, yeah, get it done now and keep an eye on it. Now, I want to say one more thing about Chelsea Green, all right? When you put somebody like Piper Niven with Chelsea Green, somebody like Chelsea Green, we saw what happened with Piper Niven. Piper Niven had to step up her game in terms of the entertainment factor to keep up with Piper Niven, Chelsea Green. That's how somebody like that can help somebody like Piper Niven, right? You put them with them, and they have to step up their game.
Exactly. And what did we say happened? Piper Niven was wildly not entertaining. Not entertaining in the least. And that was her drawback. When she was with Chelsea Green, she started to become entertaining. They did the thing with the Jim Neidhart and Bret Hart thing where they dressed up cosplay. That was hilarious. They were doing some commentary at ringside when they were tag team champions. That was good. And we saw a different side of Piper Niven. An entertaining side. And that's why I said, I hope what Chelsea Green says has rubbed off on some other people. Now, I'm not putting down anybody else. You can be entertaining and not be, you know, funny or crazy. Becky Lynch is entertaining. She gets it. She gets how to be entertaining. Bianca Belair is entertaining. She gets how to be entertaining. She understands. She understands a great deal of her entertainment and her athletic ability, but she knows how to be entertaining aside from that as well. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people wrestling right now or people that are in wrestling schools right now who are not being told that being entertaining is all that important. And it is. It's the most important thing. You can go through a sea of people. I love to go to indie shows. and kind of scout people. And I can go through a litany list of people who I say, very impressive athlete, not remotely entertaining. Yeah, they know all the moves. Yeah, they did nothing wrong. Yeah, they had a decent match. Their look is plain. Their approach to wrestling is plain. Everything is just vanilla, plain, generic. And they're not entertaining. They don't stand out. They're just one more jelly bean in the bowl. Think about it. If you had a whole great big jar of red jelly beans, and in the middle of it is a polka dot one, what stands out? You're going to say, oh, look at this one, right? Well, sometimes you go to indie shows and it's a whole great big bag of red jelly beans because they're not being told that it would be better if you were the polka dot one. It would be better if you were the one who really entertained the crowd. Doesn't matter how you do it. Doesn't matter if you're going out there to lose. Doesn't matter if you're going out there to win. The entertainment factor is the factor, because if someone is entertained by you, they remember who you are. They remember your name. Next time they see you on a card, they say, I was entertained by that person last time. I'll go watch them again. And it's the whole package. If you're calling, you know, if your name is, you know, Joe Santamorelli, and that's what you're calling yourself, Joe Santamorelli is going to be wrestling, and Joe Santamorelli has a buzz cut, and he comes out in red tights and black boots, and he does the exact same moves as everybody else you've ever seen, you're never remembering him. If he calls himself, you know, Jacob Danger, and he does a bazillion things you've never seen before, and he yells at the crowd and practically causes a riot, and, you know, you're going to be like, whoa. Well, that guy was fun. Next time I see him, I can remember that name. Next time I see that name listed, I might go see him. This is the issue that we go through so much on this show, because this goes to the future of professional wrestling, too. All these people coming up, schools are being told, this is the proper way you do your super kick. This is the proper way you do your suplex. This is the proper way you do this. This is how you call a match. This is how you land. This is how you run the rope. I get it. The fundamentals are important. But after those fundamentals, rather than to say, now you got to learn a bazillion moves, once you know the basics, now it's time to work on you. Now it's time to work on who you are, why you're different than everybody else, how come you're entertaining, what you can do to make that crowd love you, hate you, boo you, cheer you, be interested in you. That's the goal. The rest of the moves will come later. As long as you know the basics, work on your character. Work on who you are. And because until you get that down, no amount of moves is going to help you. Oh, people might be impressed and say, that guy's a very good athlete. Okay, and that takes you so far. It's like saying you're a very good guitar player. You know how many very good guitar players there are? A bazillion. So big deal, you can shred a guitar. So can a bazillion people. But can you look like this guy? Can you dance around the stage like this guy? Can you entertain a crowd like this guy does? If you can't, it doesn't matter. I think that's something that's missing in wrestling, and I fear, Tom, that it's going to get worse in this year and the coming years, because I see a trend toward wrestling trying to be too sports-based and not entertainment-based enough.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I think that the entertainment value has in guys nowadays and ladies nowadays is. I'll go back to Piper Niven. How fun was it to watch Dewdrop? It was not, right? She was a big girl. Yeah, she could move, and she was very impressive. Some things she did, but did you really have any were you going to see Dewdrop fight somebody, fight Becky Lynch? No, never. Okay, but You put her with Chelsea Green, and my goodness, even the little thing in this past Royal Rumble where Chelsea Green was caught by Piper Niven, and she was like, don't drop me. Okay, I won't drop you. And she made like she was going to drop her.
Right, right.
That was hilarious. That was hilarious. And that was entertaining. The fact that they squashed Chelsea Green on several occasions during a match by accident, that's entertaining. That's fun to watch. I no longer care about their moves, what they could do in the ring. It's what I'm entertained by. Could you imagine, in contrast, could you imagine if the WWE said, okay, Steve Austin, that is, here's your new ring name, Otto Von Ruthless, and he was like, okay, I'm cool with that. No.
Yeah, this is the problem. Again, I'm not saying that talent is a bad thing. If there are people who do both. Shawn Michaels was wildly entertaining, but he was also a great professional wrestler. Ideally, you're both. The greatest wrestlers would be both. Wildly entertaining, able to suck the audience in, but also able to put on a five-star match. That would be like saying in baseball, your ideal guy is a gold glove fielder who hits 350 with 40 home runs and 40 stolen bases and 150 RBIs. Yeah, of course that's your ideal baseball player. How many are there? Not very damn many. So then you have to understand that, well, what's the most important thing? Maybe you're a fielder. That's your goal. Okay, well, then, if you're winning a Golden Glove and you're still here hitting 240, you're contributing to the team because you're saving them runs with your glove. Well, we need wrestlers who are just making sure that their ultimate goal, much like Damian Sandow said, Chelsea Green reiterated, your real goal is to entertain the crowd. You're a performer. Entertain them. Your win-loss record is secondary. It only matters because if you lose, people get maybe lose interest in you, and you have to find new ways to entertain them. But your hope is that every time you go out there, you do something that's entertaining. If you can pull that off, then, Todd, then I would suggest you're probably going to be a successful professional wrestler.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this, I remember back in the 80s when Bobby Heenan was at special attraction matches, the loser had to wear the weasel suit as entertainment. And like you said, Bobby Heenan was one of those guys who could entertain the crowd or the viewer or anything.
Well, you make a good point because I run into so many people who say, you know, Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross were a great announced team, but probably the greatest was Heenan and Monsoon. Heenan and Monsoon didn't call very many technical things. They weren't saying, oh, there's a perfect Hurricanrana and there's a, you know, three amigos suplex, and here was a this, that, and the other. They didn't do that. They just entertained the crowd with their banter back and forth. With Bobby Heenan aggravating Gorilla Monsoon, and Gorilla Monsoon saying, will you stop that every 5 minutes? And it was just entertaining. And it added to your entertainment of the show when they were doing primetime wrestling. That's why to this day people still say they were a great announce team. They weren't technically wizards at knowing every single move and calling them perfectly as if it was Mauro Ranallo out there calling. They weren't doing that, and they weren't expected to do that. They were expected to entertain you and make that match more interesting to you. And, Mike, they succeeded in doing that as good as any announce team ever did.
Absolutely, and that's the thing, and think about it. I mean, Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross, for a period of a great amount of years, were the best team. And, I mean, you had the guy, Jim Ross was the guy that was this guy's got this move and that move and this move and that move, but then you got Jerry Lawler, puppies and all that stuff,
right.
And the way he said things, and that was entertaining, you know. You got a guy trying to call a straight wrestling match, and you got a guy going puppies, 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 and all that stuff. And think about this. Let's take one guy, Sami Zayn, right? When he first came in, what did we say about him? When he first came up to the main roster, what did we say about him? He was boring. Look at him now. He's very much entertaining. Lord knows.
And nothing has changed. His moveset is still boring. I still think he's boring in the ring, but he's not a boring guy. You're rooting for him because of what he does outside the ring. You know, when he literally says, look, I'm in this elimination chamber and qualifier, and who do I pick first round? Drew McIntyre. I've never beaten him. He's right, I've never beaten him. But it's a path. It's a path to WrestleMania. And he says, last year I was feature match at WrestleMania. This year I don't even have a path. You know what my path is? Go through Drew McIntyre, who I've never beaten. So, yeah, that's not a good path, but at least it is a path. So I'll take it. That's a great thought. And it makes people believe in his character, that he believes that. Now, obviously, you're talking to a guy who knew damn well he's losing. But he still managed to rope the fans in by saying, gee, I don't know. It almost makes it sound like he's going to pull off this miracle victory because he's saying, I need this. This is the only path to WrestleMania. It makes it much more interesting. Sami Zayn is very good at that. Jey Uso is very good at that. There's several people who are very good at that. That's their entertainment value. A guy like CM Punk, unless he's on the mic, he's not entertaining. He's not entertaining in the ring to me. There's nothing CM Punk does in the ring that I find remotely entertaining. On the microphone, he can be entertaining sometimes. So give him the microphone more. That's the goal of any wrestling federation and any bookers and any writers, is to find what's the most entertaining aspect of the talent you have and exploit it. Okay, they're not so good in the ring, so we better exploit the fact that they're really good on the microphone. Okay, so they're brilliant in the ring, but not so much on the mic. Okay, we'll exploit the in-ring stuff then. Whatever it happens to be, that's what you have to exploit while you're hiding the weaknesses. But when you got the WWE does the opposite sometimes. They got a guy like Otis who's just absolutely as charismatic as can possibly be, and you never give him the mic. How's he supposed to be charismatic just walking out? You give him something to do, he'll be charismatic. He'll draw fans. You're not giving him anything to do. So he can't. A guy like Ricochet can't use the mic. He's terrible. But if you tell him, look, man, you know, if you want to cut loose and do some moves that we told you you really can't do or shouldn't do, go ahead. Show us what you got. If you got some new stuff that's going to dazzle the audiences, go ahead. Because that's your strength. If we don't let you do your high-flying stuff, we've taken away the tools in your toolbox. So go ahead. Do what you need to do. That's important. WWE doesn't do that. They tend to handcuff their talent and tell them don't do these things. Or, well, he's great on the mic, but don't give him the mic. He's great in the ring, but limit what he can do. And Mike, that's a recipe for disaster.
That's a recipe for disaster. But then again, when they found something, they ran with it. I mean, how long have they run with the New Day? Even when they're just the two of them, right? They work well together as a tag team. I'd love to see Big E back, but they still work well as a two-man tag team. And I mean, at one point, they were so entertaining where the New Day, they were selling goddamn unicorn horns and and Budio cereal and and throwing pancakes in the crowd, you know?
Absolutely. And they're going to have this trouble again because I'm watching Bron Breakker, who I like in NXT. But Bron Breakker in NXT is this big, strong, powerful Brock Lesnar type guy. And then you see him walk on to SmackDown, and he's not as big as Adam Pearce. And you're saying, well, how are you going to do this? How are you going to put him in the ring with Bobby Lashley or Drew McIntyre or Roman Reigns? He's going to look like a third of their size. And you're going to say, oh, no, he's going to be the this and that and the other thing. He's going to be the new Brock Lesnar. How? It's not going to work. People are not going to believe it. So I already see a problem for him. I already see a major problem for him. Anyway, the Elimination Chamber, look, folks, I don't know who's going to win the Women's Elimination Chamber. My assumption would be that probably Becky Lynch wins. But I don't think there's too much doubt about who's winning the men's. It's probably going to be Drew McIntyre, since they've announced that's who's going to win, that's who's going to fight Seth Rollins. I imagine you've set that up perfectly. And obviously it's not going to be, Bronson Reed. So there's people in there that you can easily eliminate and say it's not going to happen. I would imagine you're looking down the barrel of Drew McIntyre. This is the problem when you paint yourself into a corner, is that all of your stuff becomes relatively predictable. And I just don't see anybody else winning this Elimination Chamber, Mike.
I agree with you. And one other thing about Bron Breakker, he's not even as big as Karrion Kross. Think about it. I mean,
right.
Karrion Kross is standing next to two absolutely monstrous people, you know, in the AOP.
Yep.
You know, so
right.
When you got that going on, and I mean, you look at him, you look at Bobby Lashley, you look at even the Street Profits, who Montez Ford has put on, what, 20, 25 pounds now?
Yep.
Whatever it is. So you got all these guys that are big guys that you look at Bron Breakker, and it's like, okay, he's maybe 230, maybe 230. Maybe.
Right.
You know?
It's going to be very hard to promote him as a Brock Lesnar type guy. It's just going to, because he doesn't look like it. He doesn't look like the type of guy that's going to outpower a lot of these guys in the WWE. He just doesn't. Now, noticeably absent since the Royal Rumble is Jade Cargill, who's done a zero. I don't know where that's going. It's just bizarre sometimes what the WWE does. It's just bizarre. I warned everybody she's not great in the ring. And I think they saw in the Royal Rumble, maybe still not ready to go here yet. I don't know what they're going to do with it. No idea. No idea whatsoever. I know the Elimination Chamber is somewhat predictable. It's still going to be fun to watch, you know, but I do think that there's more to the story, by the way, with Cody Rhodes and The Rock. We're still going to get a lot more into that because, quite obviously, Paul Heyman, in no uncertain terms, told Triple H, we're coming next week with Roman Reigns and The Rock to discuss things with you. If I did not know better, there's no way Triple H is ever going to get in the ring again with the problem he had with his heart. It's not happening. But there's going to be some angle, I think, with the power struggle between The Rock and Triple H, that they're quite obviously hinting at that. Now, I still say the logical booker in me says somehow The Rock ends up being special guest referee. Everybody thinks he's going to screw Cody Rhodes, and instead he screws Roman Reigns, And this whole thing has been chalked up to The Rock and Cody getting their heads together to how do we get Roman Reigns the hell out of here because he's disgraced the family. Name. I still think that's what's going to happen because then it puts The Rock back into being a hero again so he can go do his movies and be a hero. I do not see The Rock in any way, shape, or form costing Cody Rhodes or having a long-term run as a heel. I just don't think it's good for his career, and I don't think he'd do it. So, Todd, I think it's much more likely we see The Rock at WrestleMania help Cody Rhodes finish his story.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, we're all calling this now with The Rock double-crossing Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. And like you said, this is not a long-term thing. Like my Spidey sense is telling me he's double-crossing Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. That's my little Spidey senses there.
Yeah, I think I can smell that one coming, Mike.
Yeah, I think I can smell that one coming. And I also think I can smell something coming up with AJ Styles and the OC because it looks like the OC, the Good Brothers and Mee Chin are together and AJ Styles is kind of on the outs with them. So we got to see what happens with that, you know. And look, I agree with you about Cody Rhodes. I agree with you about, you know, The Rock and stuff like that. And we know for a fact that for a while Roman Reigns has been wanting to take a break, kind of an extended break, right? So why not have this gets the title off of Roman Reigns. He goes off and does whatever he's going to do, maybe take a break, spend time with his family. Maybe The Rock has lined him up a possible movie thing to possible appearance of some movie that The Rock is doing, you know, or TV show or the Young Rock TV show or whatever. And then he comes back and there's a possibility that Roman Reigns puts the bloodline back together again, but this time it's faces.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot to this. I think this, again, people are saying to me, are you sure this wasn't written ahead of time? Yeah, I'm sure it wasn't. This was not the plan. The plan was very clearly, let's replace CM Punk with Cody. It'll be fine. People like Cody. It'll be a great match, which, of course, it will be. They're used to each other, so it would have been a great match. And people love The Rock so much that they'll say, oh, my God, The Rock against his own flesh and blood, that'll be great. And they didn't count on the backlash they got from the fans. When they got that backlash, they realized we can't do this. And that's when they decided, okay, well, then we'll just do, you know, we'll call an audible. Now people are saying, well, then why would the Elimination Chamber be, you know, take place? Because that was always going to be, wasn't it always going to be for who was fighting Seth? Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't have announced that Cody was going to fight Seth. Cody would have been in the Elimination Chamber. And he would have won. That was the plan. Now that they're not going to do that, Cody's not in the Elimination Chamber, Drew McIntyre is going to win. Now, I do want to mention one thing, because I believe this is real. Very seldom do I get marked out and believe something's real that isn't, but this one I do believe. I know Seth Rollins is a businessman, and he'll work with anybody, and he says things just to cause controversy and stuff, but recently he said something that really strikes me as something he may actually believe. He may be exaggerating a little bit, but he said, CM Punk's going to come back in a year, and he's going to get hurt. Because that's what he does. He's a fragile old man, and he's going to come back in 6 months, 8 months, a year, and within a month or two, he's going to get hurt again. And I couldn't help but think to myself, well, that's sort of what I said. It's exactly what I said when they signed CM Punk. This is his track record. This is what he's going to do. And I know people are calling Seth Rollins on the carpet for it, saying, well, you've been injured enough. Yeah, but let me tell you something. Seth Rollins, for a long time, if you people go back in time, carried this company on his back. Busted his ass week after week after week after week after month being the guy for I don't know how long, a long time. Really long time. But for him to have a couple of injuries in that length of time is not outrageous. CM Punk goes into AEW and within a month he's injured. And then he comes to WWE. Within a couple of months and a half he's injured. This is way different than carrying the company on your back for years and being injured, Mike. So I don't really think it's a fair comparison.
I don't think it's a fair comparison. And plus, I mean, when you've got a guy who tears his off the bone and continues the match, and he could very well have cut the match right there. What does that say, you know, with Cody versus CM Punk, you know?
Yeah. So I believe that Seth Rollins probably means that because it's probably pretty irritating. A guy that's injured like this, and he's looking at surgery, and do I even make it to WrestleMania? And hopefully I do, and maybe I'll be able to just work past it and, you know, then maybe take time off or whatever I have to do. To see a guy like CM Punk just come in and say, oh, well, I don't know, I'm out for 9 months, and leave Seth Rollins high and dry for an opponent, and I can imagine that being irritating as hell. I can imagine that being irritating as hell. Can you imagine if you're being told you're going to work with a guy you don't really like and you say, okay, I'll do it, but we're going to make it WrestleMania. It's going to be a huge match because it's WrestleMania match, so it's a biggie. And to be honest, Seth's probably going to win that. Seth has lost enough, so they're probably going to have Seth win that. And they tell him, Seth, you're working with CM Punk. We know you don't like him, but it's a big WrestleMania main event. You've never really main evented a WrestleMania. It's going to be the big WrestleMania main event, and you're winning. And he says, okay, I'll do it. And then Punk gets injured. And you're like, well, that figures, doesn't it? There goes my WrestleMania main event, and there goes my win over him. And this is looks, you know what I mean, Mike? It looks a little weird, and you say to yourself, God, you know, come on already. And I believe some of the things he said, he probably means.
Right. And this is, look, this is, he's a consummate pro, but when you don't like somebody, you don't like them, right? I mean, there, you know, he said some things about Cody, but again, Cody is a very likable guy. Even when he's, even when he was doing, you know, dashing Cody Rhodes and all that stuff, he was still a very likable guy. It doesn't matter what CM Punk does. He is not a likable guy. He just isn't.
I mean, to his group of fans, I guess he is, but I just don't know how. Because I just don't know what it is that he does that's so special. I just don't get it. So, I don't know. People are saying 6 to 9 months here for CM Punk, and he's saying it's going to be the greatest comeback in the history of pro wrestling. He's just going to be a year older, Todd. I just don't see this as being anything major.
Like you said, with CM Punk and everything, and I remember back in 2014 when he actually walked out on the company and everything and just didn't care, you know? This is the guy who doesn't care about the business. And this is the guy who is not likable with the people in the back, with mostly wrestling fans in general, is not likable with him.
I don't think this is going to endear him to fans either. I mean, he can't help being injured. I'm not saying, oh, well, he's dogging the injury. He's not dogging the injury. He's obviously injured. But at the same time, how do you get behind a guy who every time he steps in the ring, it's a question mark of if he's going to be injured and out for 9 months? It's not like he got himself into peak condition to come into the WWE, or even particularly that he did it with AEW. That's another thing. AJ Styles, you know, does the fake injury thing, and look what he does. He takes time off, and he comes back, and it's like, Jesus Christ, man. Yeah, he probably juiced himself up, but look at the shape he's in. And then you see CM Punk walk into the arena, and you're like, it's just like some homeless dude walking in here. It doesn't look remotely like he could compete with any of these people on any level. But I'm CM Punk, so I don't need to look good. I'm CM Punk, so I don't need to put on a little muscle. I don't need to work. I don't need to do anything. And then you get injured. And you say, oh, well, I don't know. I'm out for 9 months. Just keep the checks coming. It's frustrating, Mike, and I'm sure it's frustrating to the wrestlers who bust their ass to stay in the condition that they're in.
Right, and think about this. How much you want to bet that when she comes back, Charlotte Flair is going to be in tremendous, I mean, just rocked up to the gills in tremendous shape. And rightfully yeah. so, and people are going to love her when they see her, and people are going to blow the roof off of the place for her. Unlike what they're going to do for CM Punk when he gets back, because people actually like.
I'm glad you mentioned her, because there are some rumors that she might be back in time for this Elimination Chamber. There are some people saying you might see Charlotte Flair as a surprise entrant to the Elimination Chamber. If she's in it, she's winning it. And that would be the reason they would hide it. Because if you announce it now, then she's winning. I mean, that's just as obvious as can be. So it may be just like the week before or a few days before that we might see an appearance by her. I don't know if it's true, but that's some of the rumors I've been hearing, is that she's ready. If she is, well, then she is, and I guess she'll probably win it. Anyway, folks, we'll be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw report. Thanks for listening.
Fast ball and a high drive into deep left center field. It's away, out, and gone.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.